106.6. Okay, that was Richard Marx with Endless Summer Nights. I'm Dom Robinson, and you're listening to the DVD Fever Show with me, Dom Robinson, on North Manchester FM 106.6. It's a weekly show where I look through the week's releases in movies and video games. There's some news, plus the charts, and a look at what's new on TV. And DVDFever.co.uk is a non-profit website that really deserves your attention, so go there now! Well, in a bit. Anyway, if you've got anything to say about anything you hear on the show, get in touch via the Facebook page. Just go to facebook.com/DVDFeverShow. And the Richard Marx track goes out especially for my good friend and barber, Chris James, and his partner, Angie. And I've been going to his barber's ever since he started up his shop in 1992. That's Christopher James Barbers on Fir Road in Bramall. And like going into your favourite pub, I know I can go in there and just ask for my usual. Of course, I have to say, but yeah, other barbers are available, but they're rubbish. So that's why I only go there. And also, happy birthday to my sister Sam, who is 43 today. She's 3 years older than me, which means that this coming Saturday I will be... I really don't want to think about it, to be honest. So what we have in this show today, well, in the first hour, it's all about films. And we start off with a review of Joseph Gordon-Levitt, even, and Seth Rogen in 50-50 on Blu-ray. We have the top 10 movie charts. Let's look at the new cinema releases out this Friday, including Battleship and The Cabin in the Woods. And look at the new DVD and Blu-ray releases out this week, including the Die Hard Quadrilogy and Texas Killing Fields. So we started with 50-50, and it's a film that I wasn't sure whether or not I would like, given how its premise didn't seem to fit any kind of comedy bill, but I was very pleasantly surprised. When Adam, Joseph Gordon-Levitt, gets some recurring pain in his back, he goes to see his physician, Dr. Ross, Andrew Early. And as on the MRI scan, up pops a malignant tumour, which is eroding his spine. Dr. Ross doesn't really help by being very coy about the situation, especially when going on to explain how his case is fascinating, because it's down to a rare gene condition. This leads him going for an appointment with Dr. McKay, Anna Kendrick. Surprised to learn she's a girl around his age. There's still, however, a lot of very humorous moments, such as when his girlfriend Rachel, Bryce Dallas Howard, buys him a retired greyhound. He says, "What, you got me an old dog?" To which she replies, "Well, he's not that old." Which he follows up with sarcastically, "Well, he's old enough to be retired." And she tells him that dogs help with the healing process. To which he replies, "Well, does he have a medical license?" 50-50 tells a true story with a lot of banter between Adam and Kyle, Seth Rogen, such as where Kyle's trying to get Adam laid following some hiccups, shall we say, in his relationship. Ones I really can't go into. I mean, there's some fantastic dialogue in it, but I can't really say it this time of day on the radio. All the key cast members are superb in their roles, and there's some nice additions from Matt Frewer, aka Max Headroom, and Philip Baker Hall as fellow cancer patients undergoing treatment at the same time as Adam. There's also Angelica Houston as Adam's mother, but she really doesn't seem to push the boat out, quite frankly. Now, there's a lot more I could say about it all here, but to do so would be to give to you spoilers, and you just have to sit back and enjoy the interplay between all the key characters, especially those of our two leads, and particularly Seth Rogen, because whenever I've seen a trailer for a film with him in it, it steered me away from all of them, because he just comes across as such an annoying moron. But here, yeah, he really surpasses all that. Presented in 16:9 in 1080p high definition, there isn't a single flaw in the encoding process, so it does look crisp and clear throughout. The sound is in 5.1 DTS Master Audio, for which I got having sort of box sound of 5.1 DTS, because I've not got a big expensive system, but there we go. But to be honest, it doesn't really matter here, because it delivers nothing out of the ordinary for a drama with little or no challenges on the audio side. These extras rather as follows. There's some featurettes, and I know the word featurettes indicates that they're brief, but there's only 9 minutes across all four of them. As such, all the chat from the cast members featured is just too brief to be of any real use. There's deleted scenes over the course of 6 minutes. There's five, all with optional audio commentary. I'm in two minds about putting back numbers 3 and 4, and because I can't really go into detail about what's in them without giving spoilers, so you'll just have to watch the film. But even if all of these just existed as extras, you know, they're still certainly worth a watch. Then we have the story of 50-50, which runs for about 8 minutes. It's a brief look at the history of the project with Seth Rogen, co-producer Evan Goldberg, and writer Will Reiser, who went through the experience depicted on screen. There's also a chat from Joseph Gordon-Levitt and director Jonathan Levine, who comments on how there's a lot of improv between Joseph and Seth throughout the film, which ended up in the final draft. And as such, such scenes show they work brilliantly. There's also Life Inspires Art, which runs about 9 minutes. Split into four sections, there's chat from the usual suspects, which covers all the basics of the inspiration for the film and how it was put together. So just enough to give you a flavour of how things were behind the scenes. There's also Seek and Destroy, which runs for about 2 minutes. It's a very brief featurette about a particular scene, which, like a lot of other things here, would to go into detail about them would just act as a spoiler. So, not a great number of extras, and there's not even a trailer in there, which is a bit remiss of them. Overall, for the film, definitely 9 out of 10. I was really, really blown away by this. Picture, I'd give it 10 out of 10 for that. The sound, 7. It's all right, but it's a drama. What are you going to do? Extras, a mere 3. And overall, 8. 8, I mean, the picture and the sound, picture and the film themselves just do bring it up, quite frankly. But the rest is a bit of a letdown. Okay, so we're going to have a bit more music now before we have the top 10 movie charts. And I played Richard Marx's Endless Summer Nights at the start. And I remember I was on holiday in Louisiana in 1987 over the summer for about a week or two. And there was a song, there's a song by this chap called Richard Marx, which came on MTV. And it was called Don't Mean Nothing. And it was his first single. And it just blew me away. And I've used that phrase with the film, but anyway. It's just, what was really annoying was that when I came back home, it just got ignored by all the radio stations. I mean, shortly after that, he released Right Here Waiting, and that rocketed up the charts. But I think even though this got a re-release, it still never managed to get inside the top 40, or just, even if it did, it didn't climb very high. Because the single-buying public, a lot of the time, are just complete, can't really say the words that I'd like to say, but they just, you can see the kind of tat they buy by pushing Katy Perry up the bloody charts. Oh, and Jessie J. Anyway, if you ever missed it out on hearing this song, this now's your chance, because this is absolutely fantastic. It was his first ever song, and here we go. It's Richard Marx and Don't Mean Nothing. This is 106.6. 106.6. Okay, you're back with the DVD Fever Show with me, Don Robinson. In this section, we have a look at the top 10 movie charts, and as always, I go through the US movie charts here because I just find them more interesting, quite frankly. So we start off with a lot of same films will be out over here anyway, but it does, for the rest of it, give you an idea of what's mostly going to be coming up in the UK soon as well. And we start off with The Hunger Games, which is at number 1. And in the not too distant future, North America has collapsed, weakened by drought, fire, famine, and war, to be replaced by Panem. A country divided into the capital and 12 districts. Each year, two young representatives from each district are selected by lottery to participate in the Hunger Games. Part entertainment, part brutal intimidation of the subjugated districts, the televised games are broadcast throughout Panem. The 24 participants are forced to eliminate their competitors, literally, with all citizens required to watch. When 16-year-old Katniss's younger sister Prim is selected as the mining district's female representative, Katniss follows to take her place. She and her male counterpart, Peter, will be pitted against bigger, stronger representatives who have trained for this their whole lives. Starring Jennifer Lawrence, Josh Hutcherson, Liam Hemsworth, Elizabeth Banks, and Woody Harrelson. I understand this is based on a series of books, and as someone who's a bit of a complete book philistine, I always wait for the films, this really does look very much on the average side. I've heard some reports about it being good, but I don't know, I mean, it just sounds like Battle Royale cut for 12 certificates. And apparently it has been cut as well. I don't know what's been cut out of it. I haven't really looked into that. But the fact you've got to cut it just to get bums on seats in the cinema, it does happen far too often, and it is a bit sad, quite frankly. So but either way, I'll be giving this one a big miss. Something else I'll be giving a miss is Wrath of the Titans, which took $33.5 million in its opening week. A decade after the heroic defeat of the monstrous Kraken, Perseus, the demigod son of Zeus, is attempting to live a quieter life as a village fisherman and the sole parent to his 10-year-old son Helios. Meanwhile, a struggle for supremacy rages between the gods and the Titans. Dangerously weakened by humanity's lack of devotion, the gods are losing control of the imprisoned Titans, and their ferocious leader Cronos, father of the long-ruling brothers Zeus, Hades, and Poseidon. The Triumvirate had overthrown their powerful father long ago, leaving him to rot in the gloomy abyss of Tartarus, a dungeon that lies deep within the cavernous underworld. Perseus cannot ignore his true calling when Hades, along with Zeus's godly son Ares, switch loyalty and then make a deal with Cronos to capture Zeus. The Titan's strength grows stronger, and Zeus's remaining godly powers are siphoned, and hell is unleashed on Earth. Oh, it just bores me from there. I mean, if you like the first one, then you'll probably like this, but I hated the first one. It was overlong, underwritten, and everyone acted like they were made of wood. Dull, dull, dull. I'm definitely not seeing this film. Something else that I'm really not, really going to give a miss to as well is number three, it's taken $18.1 million in its opening weekend, is Mirror Mirror, The Untold Adventures of Snow White. One of the most beloved stories of all time is coming to life in the motion picture event for the whole family, Mirror Mirror. A fresh and funny retelling of the Snow White legend, it says here. Mirror Mirror features breakout star Lily Collins from The Blind Side as Snow White, a princess in exile, and Julia Roberts as the evil queen who ruthlessly rules her captured kingdom. Seven courageous rebel dwarfs join forces with Snow White as she fights to reclaim her birthright and win her prince in this magical comedy filled with jealousy, romance and betrayal that will capture the hearts and imaginations of audiences the world over and bore the pants off me, no doubt. The film also stars Armie Hammer, what a stupid name, from The Social Network as the prince, and Nathan Lane from The Birdcage as the hapless and bungling servant to the queen. I've seen the trailer, and well, as you can gather, it just looks completely dire. And why do we not have one but two Snow White films and a TV series all released around the same time? It's just, I hate this, I hate that sort of thing. It just sounds a bit forced and a bit mad. Only one can win, really, and well, the one that's on Channel 5, that's not going to win, is it? Considering how appalling their ratings are. Number four, we have 21 Jump Street, which features two underachieving police officers, Jonah Hill and Channing Tatum, who go undercover in high school in order to bust a drugs ring. And with the tagline, "The only thing getting blown tonight is their cover," this film stars current hot properties Jonah Hill from The Sitter and Moneyball, and also Channing Tatum from Haywire and The Vow. And the trailer for this does have a lot of good laughs in it, and I think it does look well worth a watch. Number five, we've got Dr. Seuss's The Lorax, where a 12-year-old boy searches for the one thing that will enable him to win the affection of the girl of his dreams. To find it, he must discover the story of the Lorax, the grumpy yet charming creature who fights to protect his world. Starring Danny DeVito as the Lorax, plus Ed Helms, Zac Efron, Taylor Swift and Betty White, there's no doubt there's a lot of great animation in here, but as anyone will know who listens to this show, CGI animation films really do not do it for me, so I'm going to be giving this one a miss. Number six is John Carter. Now, I'm not going to go into detail about this again. Everyone knows what it is. It's the one where it should be called John Carter of Mars. And then a focus group decided it should be called John Carter. They should drop the odd Mars part from the title. And I did a review of this last week. So if you want to hear it, just go to dvdfever.co.uk, click on the podcasts and listen to show number 32, where you'll find it on the very start of the show. And also the trailers for all these films, just go to, if you want to see them all, just go to facebook.com/DVD Fever Show. Now, number seven, we have Salmon Fishing in the Yemen. And stuffy government fisheries scientist Fred is asked by a fishing-obsessed Arab sheikh to do the seemingly impossible. Introduce British salmon to the wadis of the Yemen. Despite considerable trepidation, Fred is finally won over by the charismatic Arab, who reveals that fishing brings him closer to God. And he hopes it'll have the same effect on his countrymen. Fred also begins to fall for the Sheikh's beautiful legal representative, Harriet. So he rises to the Sheikh's eccentric challenge, casting off his English reserve on a transformational journey of self-discovery and late-blooming love. Now, surprisingly, starring Ewan McGregor, Emily Blunt and Christian Scott Thomas, surprisingly, this does look somewhat intriguing, even though you wouldn't really expect that at first. The trailer just kind of grabs you as it goes, and I really didn't think I was going to like that, so I think this is definitely worth a watch. Number eight, we've got Act of Valor, and basically it's a film where it's basically it's an unprecedented blend of real life heroism and original filmmaking. Act of Valor stars a group of active duty Navy SEALs in a powerful story of contemporary global anti-terrorism. Inspired by true events, the film combines stunning combat sequences, up to the minute battlefield technology, and heart pumping emotion for the ultimate action adventure. Act of Valor takes audiences deep into the secretive world of the most elite, highly trained group of warriors in the modern world. Now, say all the people in the film are portrayed by active duty Navy SEALs, where the missions are fictitious, but the weapons and tactics are real. And given the look of the film, it comes across as like a movie version of all those Socom games which I played on the PSP. It does look brilliantly directed, so I'd highly recommend this. What I'm definitely not going to recommend is A Thousand Words at number 9, which is just looks like a terrible comedy with Eddie Murphy. Well, basically every comedy that's come out since the 80s ended that has Eddie Murphy in it has been terrible. And just basically, if he's a fast-talking idiot, and if he says 1,000 words, he's going to die. And let's hope he says them very quickly. Maybe the limp comedy will work on kids who haven't seen his films over the last 20 years, but, you know, I've seen some of them, and this just looks like one to avoid, quite frankly. Number 10, we've got Journey to the Mysterious Island, which has Vanessa Hudgens in it, wearing probably not a lot, so that's all I can really recommend for that. Okay, so there we are with the top 10 movies, and in a moment we'll have a bit of music, and then we'll have the new cinema releases out this Friday. So this is 106.6.
106.6.
Okay, you're back with the DVD Fever Show on Manchester's 106.6, and in this section we're going to have a look at the new cinema releases out this Friday, starting with Battleship. And in the Hawaiian Islands, an international naval fleet at Pearl Harbor engages in a dynamic and intense battle against an alien species known as the Regents. The aliens come to planet Earth on a mission to build a power source in the ocean. Upon their visit, they come in contact with the naval fleet. The film is also purported to show both sides of the story, from the aliens' perspective as well as the humans, so the audience knows exactly where the opponent's ships are. Starring Taylor Kitsch from John Carter of Mars, Alexander Skarsgård, Brooklyn Decker, Rihanna, and Liam Neeson. Why Rihanna? Why? Why? God knows. The trailer looks like it's worth a watch for sure, but I'm not sure really of the longevity. I mean, it does run for just over 2 hours, so I don't know whether it would really, you know, something based on a board game or, you know, those little battleships you used to play when you were a kid, how that can really stand its, you know, the test for 2 hours. Probably not. Then we have The Cabin in the Woods, where five friends go for a break in a remote cabin in the woods, unsurprisingly, where they get more than they bargain for. Together, they must discover the truth behind the cabin in the woods. Can the description say cabin in the woods any more often than it does? Probably not. Starring Christine Connolly, Chris Hemsworth, and Anna Hutchinson, there's an element to the trailer that makes it unique to this genre, but which makes it have a sort of Truman Show-like feel, as, you know, the circumstance is anything but that. Let's hope it pans out better than most. Also out this Friday, we have 666 The Prophecy. And following the tragic death of his wife Sarah and son Cole in a fire caused by an insane fan, famed American best-selling author Joseph Krohn is suffering severe depression that prevents him from writing. While attending psychological support sessions, he meets Sadie, a young woman who has suffered a similar tragedy. One day, after a heartwarming conversation with Sadie, Joseph suffers a horrible car accident, but comes out of it miraculously unscathed. The accident occurs at exactly 11:11 a.m. Soon Joseph will discover that 11 is a number that was somehow important in his past life, and is doomed to appear more and more often in his daily existence. Now, originally entitled 11:11:11, this film was released on November the 11th last year in the US, and it would have made sense to do the same here, but with Remembrance Day getting in the way, they might have, you know, not gone for that on purpose. Either way, with no one famous in this, it doesn't look at all exciting, quite frankly, just rather disappointing. Next up we have Blackthorn, and in Bolivia, Butch Cassidy, now calling himself James Blackthorn, pines for one last sight of home, an adventure that aligns him with a young robber and makes the duo a target for gangs and lawmen alike. Starring Sam Shepard in the lead role, and also starring Eduardo Noriega and Steven Rea, last seen in Underworld Awakening, this is another trailer that's just utterly involving. Is there really anything out there that's worth watching this week? Well, the last film that we have to look at this week is A Night to Remember, which is a re-release. And I say all the trailers for all these are on the Facebook page. Just go to facebook.com/DVD Fever Show. And veterans of the cinema may wonder why, on my DVD Fever site, I only gave this film a mere sort of 6 out of 10. But the problem comes when one sees a remake before an original or an earlier version of the same story. And having been spoiled by the technological splendour of James Cameron's blockbusting vision of Titanic, A Night to Remember tells a good story with good acting, but running the risk of having to dodge the rotten fruit about to be thrown, this version just didn't quite cut it for me in comparison. But I'm not apologetic for that at all. So that's all your films out for this Friday, and we'll have a bit of music in a moment, and then we'll have a look at the new DVDs and Blu-rays out this week. This is 106.6.
106.6.
Okay, you're back with the DVD Fever Show with me, Don Robinson, on Manchester's 106.6. And in this section we're going to have a look at the new Blu-rays and DVDs out this week, starting with the Die Hard Quadrilogy, which is now finally out on Blu-ray for the first time. Well, as a collection at least. It includes Die Hard, where high above the city of Los Angeles, a team of terrorists have seized a building and taken hostages. But an off-duty cop named John McClane, Bruce Willis, slips away unnoticed and wages a one-man war against the bad guys. Then we have Die Hard 2, Die Harder, where on a snowy Christmas Eve in Washington, D.C., off-duty cop John McClane must battle a team of terrorists who have taken over a major international airport, while his wife is trapped in a plane circling overhead. Then we have Die Hard with a Vengeance, where accompanied by reluctant civilian Samuel L. Jackson, New York cop John McClane engages in a tense battle of wits with a psychopathic genius who is determined to blow up the city if he doesn't get what he wants. Then we have Die Hard 4.0, where they call it Live Free or Die Hard in America, which is a stupid name. John McClane delivers old-school justice to a new breed of techno-terrorists when a massive computer attack on the US infrastructure threatens to shut down the entire country. Now, the first two are easily the best, with number 3 being a 9 out of 10 for me, and number 4 being an 8 out of 10. But while the third film is now finally available on cut, the fourth one is only on DVD in the harder edition, whereas the Blu-ray version is just the theatrical one, which is dumbed down for a PG-13 in the US, so tons of strong language was removed, and even John McClane's trademark Yippee-ki-yay catchphrase was torn apart with a gun being fired in the wrong place. Idiots. Also this week we have... Oh, you've been waiting for this one, I'm sure. Pokemon the Movie Black and Pokemon the Movie White. Yeah, it's a double pack. Wow. During their travels to the Unova region, Ash and his friends, Iris and Cillian, whoever it is, does it matter, arrive in Eindoke Town, built around a castle called the Sword of the Veil. The three trainers have come to compete in the town's annual battle competition, and Ash manages to win with some unexpected help from the mythical Pokemon Victini. Who cares? And if you do care, the double pack includes the Pikachu bonus game card. Wow. Also out this week, it's a bit of a duff week for releases, I will have to say. You know, we peaked at the Die Hard box set, quite frankly. Because we now have Waterloo Road Reunited. Well, life doesn't end at Waterloo Road. Far from it. For some, leaving the school is about entering the real world and discovering how challenging that real world really is. Waterloo Road Reunited joins Michaela, Bolton, Danielle, Janice, Philip, Alicia and Paul as they dive into the adventure of adult life, making decisions and taking paths that could land them in trouble, bring them success, or take them to the very edge, and push them off, hopefully. At a reunion party, Michaela springs a life-challenging surprise on Bolton that will affect all the friends. Wow. Philip steps up to the role of knight in shining armour, but will the maiden he seeks to rescue welcome him with open arms? Paul, meanwhile, finds himself buffeted by greater storms that push him to a point of no return. Or almost. Well, surely there is a point of no return, or there's not. There's no almost about it. Anyway, with friends as tight as these and relationships as explosives, anything can happen, and will do so in Waterloo Road Reunited. And it says it has DVD extras, but quite frankly, a picture gallery and subtitles is not really much in the way of extras. The last DVD I'll talk about in this section is Whitney Houston, We Will Always Love You, 1963 to 2012. Where it says here that Whitney Houston was one of the greatest singers of all time. She still holds a spot in the Guinness World Records for the most awarded female artist ever. And this documentary brings you the life and times of the legend from her birth in 63 all the way through to her untimely death in 2012. This DVD features brand new interviews with artists, producers and industry insiders, also featuring never heard before exclusive songs. However, at just 42 minutes long, this unofficial DVD doesn't sound as comprehensive as they'd lead you to believe. For me, hashtag Whitney tribute fail. Okay, that's everything for this section. But another bit of music, and then we'll have some more Blu-rays and DVDs out this week. This is 106.6.
106.6.
Okay, you're back with the DVD Fever show for the final section of this hour, where we're having a look at some more DVDs and Blu-rays out this week, starting with Texas Killing Fields. And inspired by true events, Texas Killing Fields is an action crime thriller about two detectives in Texas City trying to solve several mysterious local murders. Texas City, Texas, and homicide detectives fight a spate of recent murders, battling each other and the draw of the haunted dumping ground known as the Killing Fields. Hard-nosed homicide detective Mike Souder, Sam Worthington, and his New York transplant detective partner detective Brian Hay, Jeffrey Dean Morgan, are called to help in the case of a missing girl in a neighbouring county. I was going to say country then. Don't have too many neighbouring countries in America. No leads, nobody, and the detectives just caught a homicide of their own in Texas City. When a street kid Brian's taken under his wing, little Anne, Chloe Moretz, goes missing, Brian can feel she's in the fields and knows he's got to go in after her. Mike knows he's got to go in after Brian. What they don't know is, if they're once in the killing fields, will any of them actually come out alive? Also starring Jessica Chastain, the trailer shows a lot of things happening in it, but nothing at all looks even the slightest bit interesting. Definitely one to avoid. Then we have Jamie and Jesse Are Not Together, where it says, taking inspiration from films like 500 Days of Summer, and Then Came Lola, and Kissing Jessica Stein, Jamie and Jesse Are Not Together is a perfect anti-date movie, it says here, with songs. Sounds like a threat. From the director of cult hit Hannah Free, join Jamie and Jesse for a ride filled with laughs, it definitely says here. Jamie is moving from Chicago to New York in 2 weeks, hoping to become a Broadway actress. Her best friend Jessica is bummed. I think that means she's a bit miffed, because she thinks she's in love with Jamie. And as moving day gets closer, she tries to make Jamie jealous by dating other women, with hilarious results, it says here. Now, there is a trailer for this on the Facebook page, but it really does feel like it's all over the place and it's massively tedious. And that's before we get to the musical numbers. Jamie and Jesse are just definitely not worth watching. If this one does, you know, if it's your bag, then you may be interested to know that there's some extras, including some rehearsal footage, behind-the-scenes featurette, and a cast and crew featurette. If you're not interested in the film, then you won't be interested in that information whatsoever. Some of the new titles out this week, there's Bill Cunningham, New York, Dragon Eyes, The Howling Reborn, Jitters, Las Acacias, Mother and Child, Shadow of the Sword, Sometimes They Come Back, Swinging with the Finkels, which sounds, well, looks dire, quite frankly, and Switch, which is a film with Eric Cantona, where he's brandishing a gun, and I don't know, it seems like, I've not seen the trailer for that yet, but it just seems sort of moderately interesting, just based on that. Some TV series and other stuff out this week, there's The Almighty Johnson Series 1, Amy Childs Fit in 30 Days, Zero to Hero in 30 Days, wow. Boone Series 7, The Chief Series 5, Saturated Live in Montreal, The Secret Life of Birds, and Weeds Season 6. Well, they finally got around to releasing that when Season 7 has already finished in America. Wait, to be honest, it's a great program, but it just gets criminally ignored by any, you know, UK network over here. Okay, so that's everything for this first hour. Now, coming up in the second hour, we've got a mixture of video games and TV, starting with the top 10 games charts. But first, we'll have a bit of music. I'm going to have Baz Luhrmann, and Everybody's Free to Wear Sunscreen. This is 106.6.
106.6.
Okay, you're back for the second hour of the DVD Fever show with me, Don Robinson, on Manchester's 106.6, and that was Crowded House with World Where You Live. In this section, well, this hour rather, we have a look at all the video game stuff and all the TV stuff you can ever want to know about. Starting with the top 10 video games charts, look at some new video games releases out this Friday, and some video games news. Then for the TV section, as usual, we'll have a look at back at some TV watched in the past week. Well, past couple of weeks since the last show, really. Look at some more programmes coming up. And a new section, well, relatively new, Mashup Madness, featuring lots of ooh were misses clips from the TV. So we start off with the top 10 games charts with, well, unsurprisingly, number one. And number one, it's staying at number one for FIFA Street. Number two, we have Mass Effect 3. Number three, we have a new entry for Tiger Woods PGA Tour 13, which does sound a bit ridiculous, because quite frankly, all the, you know, we're still in 2012, and normally the stuff with a year in it tends to come out towards the end of the year, the end of the year that precedes it, and we're only in April. That's mental. Number 4, Resident Evil, Operation Raccoon City. Number 5, FIFA 12. Number 6, Naruto Shippuden, Ultimate Ninja Storm Generations. Whatever that is. Call of Duty Modern Warfare 3 at 7. Battlefield 3 at 8. Number 9 is Mario and Sonic, the London 2012 Olympic Games. Number 10, SSX, which I tried to get a review copy of and just wasted time. Some PR companies, eh? Yeah, we'll send you it if we have enough copies left, but will you tell me if you run out of copies? Hello? No? Oh, some PR companies need a good slap. Number 12, we have the Silent Hill HD Collection. Number 15, we have Silent Hill Downpour. Number 21, we have Silent Hill... No, we don't. We have Ridge Racer Unbounded. And then we have some re-entries for number 18, Gears of War 3. Number 24, Dead Island. Number 39, Kingdoms of Almular Reckoning. And number 40, Cars 2. And we move on to some video games releases out this Friday. And there's game footage for all of these on the Facebook page. Just go to facebook.com/DVDFeverShow. And we started with The Witcher 2 Assassins of Kings Enhanced Edition on the PC and Xbox 360, which contains additional hours of gameplay for the Xbox 360, where new major adventures set in previously unseen locations, expanding the story and introducing new characters, mysteries and monsters. There's a new game intro and cinematics, with all new animations and cutscenes, including a new 3.5-minute pre-rendered cinematic depicting the assassination of King Demavend of Aedirn. BAFTA Award winner and Academy Award nominee Thomas Baginski brings this key historical event to life, setting the stage for the story told in The Witcher 2. There's an upgraded interface specifically designed for this Xbox 360. The game camera and targeting have been redesigned for the Xbox, and with upgraded pad controls, players will now be able to experience fully The Witcher 2's spectacular and thrilling combat. There's also some game DVDs. Well, the game comes on two DVDs, rather. There's also a world map, which Amazon tells me is, helpfully, a map of the game's world. There's also an original soundtrack CD with all the in-game music. And also a quest handbook for both novice and experienced role-playing fans. And also a game manual, as you would expect. Now, the game does look quite, you know, that kind of thing that has a gameplay similar to the old Thief games on the PC, which I absolutely loved. So I'm going to definitely try and check this one out. Also out this week we have Pandora's Tower, which is a special edition even on the Wii. Break a curse that threatens to transform a beloved friend into a horrific beast in this stylish, dark and captivating game for the Wii. Pandora's Tower blends RPG elements and action-packed gameplay as you assume the role of Aeron, an Athosian soldier facing a deeply personal and emotionally charged mission. With your friend Elena bound to a grave fate that is causing her to mutate into a demonic abomination, you'll feel the pressure of time and the rush of accomplishment as you take up the fight to eradicate the spreading evil that has gripped her. To add to the drama of this melancholic and unconventional adventure, it is only by consuming the remains of monsters Aeron has slain that the cruel curse of binding Elena can be reversed. The world of Pandora's Tower features 13 grueling environments to tackle, each one based within a tower structure, and each one home to grim monsters whose flesh takes on a macabre significance in the game's engrossing plotline. Enemies can be attacked in two ways, with a bladed weapon offering hard-hitting results up close, or with a magical chain possessing uses that extend far beyond overcoming opponents. Aim by pointing the Wii remote at the screen, the Oraklos chain can be used to latch onto elements of the environment, allowing the player to reach new heights, activate levers, or pull down parts of the surroundings, which sounds a bit like Tomb Raider, quite frankly. The chain also acts as the ultimate restraint when tackling monsters, allowing for the innovative combat techniques as you engage in fast and furious real-time battles. Using his sword and the magical Oraklos chain, Aeron must defeat the creatures that lurk in the tower and harvest their meat to feed to Elena. Only by eating all of the master flesh, harvested from the largest monsters within each tower, will Elena be fully cured of the curse and free from its monstrous grip. After all that, this definitely isn't my type of game anyway, but I don't have a Wii, so what are you going to do? Finally out this week we have Secrets of the Titanic, so that's a fairly timely game, out on the Nintendo DS. Travel back in time and save the ones you love in this hidden object adventure game. Join Eva and her family as they take a cruise on the Invincible, a ship following the same path as the ill-fated Titanic. After wearing her grandmother's necklace, Eva starts to experience flashbacks and finds herself on board the Titanic, not as herself, but as her beloved grandmother. Should she try and stop the Titanic from colliding with the iceberg and change the course of history forever? And if she does prevent disaster, what impact does it have on the future, and ultimately the safety of her own family? Test your hidden object and logic skills in this tense and exciting adventure game. It says there's hundreds of objects to find, hidden objects, and you can switch between 1912 and modern day and explore the two ships finding various hidden objects. It's also challenging mini games and puzzles. You can unlock including dual match, jigsaw and car parking. How do you get cars on a ship? Do they sort of drive off the pier and hope to land on the surface? Oh, I don't know. So there's two great ways to play as well. Play in timed or relaxed mode, so you can choose the game's pace. Okay, so that's new releases throughout this Friday. And in a moment we'll have a bit of music, and then we'll have some video games news. This is 106.6.
106.6.
Okay, you're back with the DVD Fever Show, and in this section we're going to have a look at some video games news. Starting with the news that the Wii U will be unable to match the visual standards achieved by the Xbox 360 and the PlayStation 3. Nintendo's new machine is not up to the same level as both of these, and is less powerful than Sony's PlayStation 3/PS Vita combo, according to a number of developers. One unnamed developer just said, "No, it's not up to the same level as either of them. The graphics are just not so powerful." A different developer at a quote-unquote major company echoed the sentiment, saying, "Yeah, that's true. It doesn't produce graphics as well as the PS3 or 360. There aren't as many shaders. It's just not as capable. Sure, some things are better, mostly as a result of it being a more modern design, but overall, the Wii U just can't quite keep up." Prior rumours have suggested the Wii U could be anywhere between similar in power and twice as powerful as the Xbox 360. It is speculated that a lack of graphical flair is one of the side effects of keeping the price down at retail, especially considering the manufacturing costs of the Wii U's tablet controller. The news comes after a report suggested that the Wii U would launch on November 18th in North America and 1 week later in Japan. But Nintendo is expected to announce the release details for the Wii U at the E3 2012 this June. Then we also have the news that the Boulder Dash XL 3D has been announced for the Nintendo 3DS. And the 3DS version features updated 3D graphics, 4 gaming worlds and 5 game modes. The game also contains 150 new caves, a new scoring mechanic, as well as high score based street pass features. The game sees players dig through caves collecting diamonds while avoiding monsters. And the game was released in normal 2D style on the Xbox Live Arcade last year, and I did a review of it on this show, and is also available for the PC. The original Boulder Dash, meanwhile, was released in 1984 and has appeared on multiple devices over the years, including the Amiga, ZX Spectrum, Commodore 64 and the NES. And there's also the news that the Sony's PlayStation 4 will feature 2 custom processing chips, according to rumours anyway. PlayStation 4, which is reportedly codenamed Orbis, will feature custom chips based on AMD's A8-3850 APU and Radeon's HD7670 GPU. The two chips are said to offer combined performance of both integrated and discrete graphics processors. The A3-3850 features a quad-core 2.9GHz processor with an integrated graphics chip and will support the DirectX 11-enabled Radeon, the other one, a rebranded version of the chip purportedly powering the new Xbox. By itself, the Radeon chip supports HDMI 1.4a output and is able to run games such as Metro 2033 and Crysis 2 at 30 frames a second at a 1080p resolution. Graphical power is likely to improve considerably, however, with the support of the secondary APU, a lightweight operating system, and games designed specifically for the console. The chips are also being custom-built for Sony's device, so specifications are almost certain to change. Despite speculation that it will unveil its new console at this year's E3 event in Los Angeles, Sony has distanced itself from announcing the PS4 in 2012. Instead, it will concentrate on the PS3 and the recently released handheld PS Vita, which also had a review on this very show just a few weeks ago. And finally, we have the news that THQ won't be around in 6 months. Well, according to the CEO of Grand Theft Auto developer Take-Two. Take-Two's Strauss Zelnick suggested that THQ's strategy of making games around licensed properties is fatally flawed because it leaves publishers at the mercy of the license holders, both financially and creatively. He said THQ's strategy was licensed properties first and foremost. Licensed stuff from other people, whether it's UFC or WWE, or a motion picture property and make a game around that. And our approach, since we took over the company, is 100% owned intellectual property. The most important difference is quality. Take-Two has the highest quality ratings among third-party publishers, according to Metacritic and most people in the industry. Quality really, really matters. THQ has had some good games, but their quality levels aren't even remotely. You know, the quality just hasn't measured up. He concluded, strategy didn't work and the execution was bad. To put it another way, the food was no good and the portions were small. THQ won't be around in 6 months. The THQ recently cut upwards of 120 jobs from two different studios, following the repackaging of its planned Warhammer MMO as a single-player game with its multiplayer elements. And the company revealed a net loss of $55.9 million for the three-month quarter ending December 31st, 2011, while CEO Brian Farrell announced plans to halve his current salary. Okay, so that's all your video games news for this week. And in a moment, we'll move on to TV, including a look at some recent programmes, including Titanic, One Night, and 2012. This is 106.6. 106.6. Hey, you're back with the DVD Fever Show, and in this section we'll have a look at some TV programmes recently watched, including Titanic, an epic four-part drama by Julian Fellowes marking the 100th anniversary of the maritime disaster, where Hugh, Earl of Manton, sets out on the maiden voyage of the Titanic with his wife Louisa and rebellious suffragette daughter Georgiana. Also on board in second class are Irish lawyer John Bately, who works for Hugh, and his wife Muriel. The Manton servants, Barnes and Watson, have a brush with their American counterparts, while Georgiana is attracted to young American Harry Widener. Life on board is comfortable for the wealthy British and American passengers, but everything changes when the ship hits an iceberg and realisation dawns that the unsinkable Titanic is going down. Starring Linus Roach, Geraldine Somerville, Perdita Weeks, Stephen Waddington, Toby Jones and Maria Doyle Kennedy. I did forget to mention this on the previous show, and then when I did watch it, I just had it on in the background and it wasn't very interesting, to be honest. So I just then concentrated on the last 15 minutes, which was when anything was going to happen. And even then it was tedious as hell. I just haven't been back since. And I don't watch Silent Witness, but when that started, at the same time as the second episode of Titanic, Titanic Episode 2 lost 4 million viewers. So that says it all. Titanic the TV series is going down, a bit like ITV's share price. Also on recently is, which I sort of touched upon last week, is One Night. And after Ted tells off a teenage girl for dropping litter outside his house, he starts to believe that the increasingly alarming events that surround the barbecue he's throwing to impress his boss are revenge attacks. His attempts to wrest back control only deepen the problem and end in tragedy. And each episode featured the same night from a different perspective, firstly from Ted, then Rochelle, then Carol, and finally Alfie. Directed by David Stewart Evans and starring Douglas Hodge, Saskia Reeves, Neil Stuart, Kelly Bright, Billy Matthews, Don Gillet, Joshua Osei, Zach Morris and Jessica Hines. Episode 1 started with Ted, a very stressed out middle-aged kitchen salesman, going in to see the school headmaster because one of the girls, Rochelle, called him an effing loser, which all can put it as here, when he challenged her about dropping some litter. At the same time, there's an ongoing story about a young boy, Alfie, going into the police station with a gun, where a detective questions him about an incident that we haven't yet seen play out. Ted gets Rochelle suspended from school while at the same time, someone posts a used condom through his letterbox, and the local kids hold a rowdy, boozy party outside his door. While enjoying a barbecue with friends, something is thrown through their kitchen window and cuts Ted's wife's arm. Ted lands on one of the kids who caused it, while his friend Kenny, Neil Stuke, also holds him down until the police arrive. The lad, who turns out to be Rochelle's sister, or Rochelle's brother rather, spits up some blood and during the argument he passes out. After coming to, they lock him in the shed while they wait for the police. Once everything calms down, after Ted has a near heart attack, he then lets Rochelle's brother out of the shed, and then goes over to a tower block because the lad had dropped his mobile at his house. Then he gets distracted by a group of lads beating someone up. A shot rings out, and the programme ended. For the second episode, entitled Rochelle, as well as covering some ground from the first episode, this one just followed her going to a wake for a small boy who'd been gunned down. Now this episode just wasn't anywhere near as interesting though, and I didn't really care for her story. In the third episode, Carol, we saw some very nice touches with scenes filmed from different angles and the interplay between the key characters that form the basis for each episode and what leads before and after the points where they meet, with each new episode bringing you more information. such as when we got into this episode, we told the exchange between Carol and Ted about the charcoal briquettes, where we saw this time that they did indeed have some of the briquettes Ted was after. Little things like that proved that this series did have a great deal to offer, and some very interesting writing. The fourth episode, though, with Alfie, brought everything together and was just fantastic. It was a standout piece of entertainment. Overall, it's well worth watching this series. And yeah, if you can still find it online, it's probably gone from the iPlayer now, but, you know, there's probably ways you can find it online. Also, recently we've had The Syndicate, which is on every Tuesday at 9 o'clock on BBC One, and a supermarket in Leeds is threatened with closure, sending its five staff, Bob, Stuart, Denise, Leanne and Jamie, spiralling into an uncertain future. Assistant manager Stuart Bradley and his younger brother Jamie are forced to take matters into their own hands, with dramatic consequences. And just when it seems that things cannot get any worse, the unthinkable happens. £18 million falls into their laps. Starring Matthew McNulty, Timothy Spall, Joanna Page, Matthew Lewis, Lorraine Bruce, Catherine Dow Blyton, the trailer made it look like it could be just another typical light-hearted evening drama for middle-aged women. And watching the programme, it certainly was. It was dreadful. One episode was more than enough. Then, something else that's worth watching, actually, is 2012, which is ongoing. And it's the second series of the star-studded comedy featuring Hugh Bonneville, Jessica Hines and Olivia Colman. The documentary cameras continue to follow the men and women responsible for delivering the London Olympic Games as they paddle increasingly hard to keep the Games on track and on budget. This time, the Algerian Olympic team threatened to boycott the Games after discovering that the Shared Belief Centre does not face Mecca. Starring Hugh Bonneville, Olivia Colman, Amelia Bullmore, Vincent Franklin, Carl Theobald and Jessica Hines, I was a massive fan of the first series, to the point where when I recorded a piece to accompany my mashup video featuring on RuTube last September, although that segment didn't actually make it to air, as the programme was just packed full of mashup videos and they couldn't fit it in, along with other interviews, I did a Q&A with the RuTube crew in a very deadpan style, where I put myself in the style of that played by Hugh Bonneville. It was simply just bloody amazing in this. I'm also over the moon that the second series has been instantly promoted to BBC Two rather than being shoved into nowhere on BBC Four like the first one. Now, the first two episodes of this had scores of classic moments of comedy, mainly between Hugh and Jessica. And despite this series containing only four episodes, Hugh revealed the news on BBC Breakfast that there will be a third series closer to the Games as well. That's well worth catching. Okay, so that's everything for this. Well, everything the programmes I watched, rather. I was going to say everything for this week, but it's not. Because we've still got a look ahead to some programmes coming up in the next week, including The Undateables. This is 106.6.
106.6.
Okay, you're back with the DVD Fever Show, and in this section we have got some new programmes coming up in the coming week, starting with The Undateables, which is on Channel 4 tonight at 9 o'clock. Now, looking for love can be tricky, but some find it harder than others. Add disability to the equation, it can sometimes seem almost impossible. This uplifting three-part series follows the journeys of several extraordinary singletons as they enter the dating circuit in pursuit of love. Tonight, Shane is from Bournemouth. The 31-year-old is a prolific amateur poet with a learning disability. He can write a lady a poem off the top of his head, but finds it hard to pluck up the courage to ask women out. Shane has been in relationships before, but hasn't been on a date for 3 years. He signed up for a speed dating night for people with additional needs. Meanwhile, Carolyn is a striking, bubbly 29-year-old from Greater Manchester who is sick of kissing frogs. She went to sleep one night 5 years ago and woke up the following morning paralysed from the chest down after a weak blood vessel burst in her spinal cord. A year later, a decade-long relationship with a childhood sweetheart broke down. In this episode, she meets a young man called Wayne. Now, I really enjoyed the first episode, which featured Luke Montague, a friend of mine, who's a stand-up comedian with Tourette's, and went on a couple of dates with a girl called Lisa, and they really hit it off, and with Luke managing to keep control of his condition a lot more than he would normally be able to do so. There are many different tales to tell in each episode, so overall the series is well worth a watch. Now, there's no more repeat of the first episode on normal telly. They usually get a repeat within, you know, sort of like once within the week before the next episode's on. So if you've not seen it technically on the big screen, small screen, you missed it. But you can see it on the smaller screen. Just go to, we'll have a look on 4OD and you'll certainly be able to watch that episode. It's brilliant. Also on this coming week, tomorrow night on Channel 4 at 9 o'clock as well, we have The Sinking of the Concordia, caught on camera. And it's a remarkable documentary uncovering harrowing scenes from one of the most tragic events in the cruise industry's history. When the Costa Concordia sank the passengers, when it sank, the passengers were able to film what happened on their mobile phones and video cameras. This film is made up almost entirely of just that footage, with no interviews, expert testimony or narration. Their footage provides an extraordinary minute-by-minute anatomy of a disaster, capturing the reality of what happened in a way that is only possible in the 21st century. From the moment the excited holidaymakers step on board the luxury cruise liner to the realisation that they are on a sinking ship fearing for their lives, viewers see what happened, as captured by those aboard on the fateful final journey. Emotionally honest and journalistically revelatory, this documentary shows the reality of what happens when an accident becomes a tragedy. Also, I was on Channel 4 on Easter Sunday, but it does get a repeat on Thursday, 19th of April, so it's on just after midnight, so it's technically the Friday, but anyway, it's, I'll give you a reminder next week. But basically, for centuries, of artists of all kinds, from Michelangelo to Martin Scorsese, Salvador Dali to Damien Hirst, and Andrew Lloyd Webber to Monty Python, have attempted to convey the meaning of the crucifixion through their work. For many, it has been a deeply personal expression of disbelief, expression of belief, rather, get your words out. Now, anatomist Dr. Gunther von Hagens, who made his name showing the world the wonders of the human body through his Body Worlds exhibitions, has decided to create a crucifix. The new piece, which he's been planning for over 6 years, is revealed in this documentary, which features interviews with leading art historians and theologians, among others, and it examines the enduring iconic image of the crucifix. Now, at the time of recording this, I haven't had a chance to watch this programme as of yet, but Gunther always provides an exceptional viewing experience that is just simply unmissable if you ever watch the autopsy programmes. I mean, I've had operations in my life, and so I'm just fascinated with how the inside of the body works anyway. And quite frankly, because I was kept alive, I had an aortic valve heart condition, and because I was sort of, that's basically what's kept me alive all my life. Part of me would love to donate my body to medical science at the end of it, but part of me would also like to give my body to someone like, well, obviously he'll be dead by the time I die, because he's a lot older than me, but whoever follows on from Gunther von Hagens, I'd love to give my body to them, for them to cut up on TV or do whatever they want, you know, and put me, plastinate me. I think it'd just be brilliant. Not that I'm going to be around to see it, but I'd love for that to happen. So I say, this programme gets repeated on Thursday the 19th of April, but if you can't wait for then, it's also on 4OD right now. And also on this week, we've got Have I Got News For You? Series 43, which starts on Friday, BBC One at 9 o'clock. It says that, well, as you all know, it's a popular news quiz with team captains Paul Merton and Ian Hislop, guest host Stephen Mangan, and this episode has guest panellists Grace Dent and Miles Jupp. Now, the last series did improve a bit, with Paul Merton finally waking up and being funny for the first time in about 5 years, but it does feel rather tired now, and I still can't forgive Merton and Hislop for forcing out Angus Dayton over a matter which, quite frankly, would soon have been forgotten. Some other stuff that's on this coming week. We've got the last episode of 10 o'clock live on Channel 4 tomorrow night, which has been a very hit and miss series. Jimmy Carr's jokes have got weaker and weaker, and they've only once had Listen to Mitchell, and the only one to hit the mark for most of the time is Charlie Brooker. Overall, I can't see this returning. It's had its second chance, and it's completely missed it. Also on Thursday night on ITV at 10:35, you can see a repeat of the final episode of Take Me Out, where attention-seeking moron Lucy Harold finally got a date. She doesn't deserve one. She was the one which Damien Merry said he would have picked, thus, as Paddy pointed out, making all the other girls second best. On the plus side, when I uploaded that to YouTube, it got 1.4 million hits, so yeah, I'm happy with that. However, you know, as the show has gone on, she has proved that she is the real arse by switching a light off as quickly as possible, twice being the only one to switch off as soon as the guys first said hello in the penultimate episode. Clearly, she wasn't going to miss a free holiday, though, you know, in the sun, and she does that for the last episode. There's also a couple of movie premieres coming up over the next week. On Saturday on ITV, there's Fast and Furious, the fourth film in the series, and then on Sunday on Channel 4, The Last Exorcism, both around about 10 o'clock. Okay, so that's all the TV that's coming up in the next week. And with a bit of music, then we'll have our new section, newish, Mashup Madness. This is 106.6.
106.6.
Okay, you're back for the last section of the DVD Fever Show with me, Don Robinson, live on Manchester's 106.6, and it's Mashup Madness time. And one thing I like to do is make mashup videos, usually made up from several different TV shows, and lasting around 1 or 2 minutes. And I've also had some of them featured on XFM Manchester's Breakfast Show with Tim Cocker and Jim Bob. And last September, one of them was also on RudeTube, for which the polite title was Snookaloopy. But following on from a comment from Dennis Taylor, talking about one of player Mark Allen's little traits, the full title became Snookaloopy, Fist Pumping in the Commentary Box. This week I'm going to feature my video Carry On BBC Breakfast, mostly taken from the Christmas special Come Breakfast With Me, which featured a lot of fanar with Sean Williams, Susanna Reid, Charlie State, Bill Turnbull, Corinne Sweet, Jenny Hill, Heather Stott, Gilbert O'Sullivan, Paul Hollywood, Lauren Evans, Gemma Howarth, Kirsty Allsop, Carol Kirkwood, Emma Jones, and Mike Bushell. Now, I'll play this in one moment, but do let me know what you think of this section. Just go to facebook.com/DVD Fever Show. Here you go. It's Carry On, BBC Breakfast.
I know you're going to dig this.
Well, there's a good phrase, which is young people need a damn good...
That characteristic blue-veined look.
Sorry, I've just squirted all over there.
Is it soft? Is it powdery? Is it solid?
Little bit of wet stuff, but milder, Ellie. Just take your umbrella with you if you go out.
It's not a waste of time, because you've actually practised. But generally speaking, you work really hard at it. I spend about 8 to 9 months a year.
It was quite pale when I saw it come out, but well done.
He is a remarkable specimen.
He polishes it every day.
It's actually thick.
It's rigorous, but it can happen very quickly.
If you overwork it, they end up like rubber. If you underwork it, it just crumbles.
And it was just rather suspiciously sticky, wasn't it?
It was.
Didn't move.
It looked like a pizza, to be honest.
I don't know. I'm saying nothing.
What's the worst, most awkward position you've been in, then?
Well, I've been in some fun positions as well, but... I've been on a harness with my feet, and I had to go down and squeeze her, but I had to be upside down. Then I'm constantly bending. Just get your head out the way.
People have got out of the habit of just doing things with their hands of an evening.
I think the battery in my clicker has just run out, actually.
Joss Stone, she has an enormous...
chocolatey mouth.
Yeah, I get everything at once. I come really early in the morning, make sure I get it all, and then, you know, go home, and then that's me done for the next 6 months. To the next one.
It's about knowing what things are the most tiring and making sure you don't do that too often.
It should be rolled quite tight.
It got less and less frequent the better I got, but I used to lock myself in my room, pull my curtains, turn the lights off, no music, and just sort of...
Just slap it on and spread it around.
Is it going to go the whole thing?
Yeah.
When did you know that you had something special on your hands?
I wouldn't handle it.
I wouldn't give it to you.
I wouldn't hold it.
No, I wouldn't trust you.
Just like that, I'd knock it off straight away.
I've experienced it.
Okay, for now, that's everything for this week. So thanks to everyone who listened, and check out all the trailer links and gaming footage from the Facebook page. Just go to facebook.com/DVD Fever Show. I'm sure I've mentioned a few times like that, at least once this programme. And I'll be back next week for some more movies, games and TV on the DVD Fever Show. Now we're going to finish with a song that I'm sure happens to many people far more times than it should. And should, but I should, well, being zero. It shouldn't happen at all, because it's just cruel. It's a nice, happy, happy song. It's the Smiths, and last night I dreamt that somebody loved me. This is 106.6.
106.6.